Before you go on, could you just elaborate? Because again, we are getting a lot of questions from oncologists about what assays to consider in the metastatic situation and what they mean, such as KRAS and BRAF and NRAS.
Well, I think that the recent data that we heard from the Dullard trial in the New England Journal suggests that it isn't as simple as just KRAS telling us whether to employ a monoclonal antibody targeting EGFR. NRAS also looks to be relevant, and patients in the panitumumab study who had an NRAS mutation did not respond to panitumumab. There's also questions about, is every KRAS mutation the same? And the data so far appears to favor the fact that a KRAS mutation should be considered a contraindication to cetuximab or panitumumab. BRAF isn't predictive of response to that, but is predictive of aggressive disease. And there are, of course, drugs that target BRAF that are out there. And the eligibility for many early phase trials may include patients that have a BRAF mutation. But it isn't something that I use normally in making decisions in first-line therapy.
So I'm curious, Randy, if an oncologist in practice says, what assays should I get done in a patient? You know, getting beyond the issue of using EGFR antibody more into looking for trials or identifying patients maybe they ought to look at differently.
That's actually a very good question. So I think Rich summarized actually very nicely, and we'll talk, I think, a little bit more about this, what we call expanded RAS analysis. And I think that will be the standard of care in a fairly short period of time because EGFR antibodies are part of the standard of care looking, you know, at non-traditional KRAS mutations and NRAS mutations. I agree with BRAF being prognostic but not predictive, and we don't routinely do this. But the patients walk into your office with a stack of papers because, and that may be the fact that they were all academic oncologists, but people are already going to Foundation Medicine or to Caris, and they're getting, you know, these broad panels of genetic alterations that are being looked at. And the question is, what do you do with that information? And right now, other than spending a lot of time talking to the patient, really not a lot, because most of those, even though they're theoretically actionable, and as Rich has pointed out, I think BRAF is sort of the poster child for that. We know that BRAF and like this unfortunate young woman, those patients do extraordinarily poorly. That being said, the vemurafenib trial, at least as a single agent, you know, patients come in and they say, well, I have a BRAF mutation. We were part of that study. Those patients really had very little benefit from single agent. There are trials underway looking at combinations, and biologically that does make sense. So just even having a theoretically actionable alteration doesn't mean that, at least in colon cancer, that it's going to work. So it's a lot of work for the, and I think probably for the practicing oncologist as well, who may not know the data as well, but at least right now we really stick to the old standbys. I think there'll be expanded RAS analysis for patients with stage 2 adjuvant, it'll be MSI status, and if you really want to, you could do BRAF just from a prognostic standpoint. But from a trial standpoint, and that was actually what most of the discussion, particularly Joanna, as also a phase 1 person, we would love for those patients to have that data because most people in this room have trials that are molecularly directed.
Getting back to whether it's practical or not, Eileen, do you think that maybe the presence of a BRAF mutation might make you feel, quote, sort of more aggressive about treatment? You know, a patient who maybe not that symptomatic, not, you know, maybe so many visceral mets, but BRAF positive, could it change your philosophy of treatment?
I think it does. I mean, we see two spectrums. We certainly see the group of people who do very poorly and have rapid disease progression. But I've also seen several people with BRAF mutations not have such a biologically active course. I think in this young lady with symptomatic and sounds like bulky disease, the data that Joanna presented of FOLFOXIRI and bevacizumab is intriguing, suggesting that that might be a strategy that would make sense for this lady as a starting treatment point.
Interesting. Let me just kind of go around here. Obviously, this is a difficult situation. She has this BRAF mutation on top of her clinical course. Charlie, what would you be thinking?
Well, I think there's several options. I agree with Eileen. The FOLFOXIRI data really look interesting vis-a-vis BRAF, and maybe that's a good idea in somebody with bulky disease with a BRAF mutation. One other point that I think it's important to make is that, and we sort of alluded to this, is that all BRAF mutations where all patients with BRAF mutations may not be alike. And it's, I think, very important that Rich mentioned that the patient did not have microsatellite instability because there's an association. MSI-high tumors are more likely to be BRAF mutated than BRAF wild type. And if you have a BRAF mutation and your MSI high, that may not be a bad prognosis. In fact, it suggests it isn't. But if you have a BRAF mutation and your microsatellite stable, those are the people that do poorly. So when you look at BRAF mutation, it's important to also know their MSI status.